You're listening to South Florida's Good News Station, WCNO, Palm City.
This is God's plan for redemption, and it's good news.
And it's a new day with Rhett Palmer. How are you? I have an old friend in the studio. She doesn't want to be called old friend. You can't make old friends, right? And this is not her first stint at writing a book. Hi, how are you? Lee McCaskill.
Right.
And nice to see you. And Lee has a new book. It's called Colored, Seated in the Rear. And it's an important time for a book like this, since there seems to be heightened awareness of the various colors of skin tones. I had a friend. He's Jewish. She's not. But anyway, the kids, something came up in a conversation where she was not allowed to play with certain people. And the daughter said, well, what do you mean? Why? We said, well, because their skin was a different color. And the daughter pauses and says, you know, out of the mouths of babes, she says, well, how stupid is that? You know? Children, they know. It is so ridiculous. I mean, people talk about other people with darker tans and they go to the beach and pour all this stuff all over their body. Now, you, in the 1960s, you were neighbors and friends with a little girl, a little black girl. You're white. They can't see you on a radio. So you decided to go back and write about your good friend.
Well, how it came up is I have four grandchildren, and they like for me to tell them stories of when their dad was growing up and when I was growing up. And one night I was telling them a story about working in tobacco. And we would ride the tobacco drags back from what we call the tobacco barn to the big house. Mm-hmm. And when I said something about a tobacco drag having no wheels, they said, you mean like the Roman Empire? And I said, well, they actually had wheels on their chariots. And they go, before that? So I said, well, you know, let me do some research and find out why the tobacco drags had no wheels. I really don't know. So I called the library where I grew up. And much to my surprise, a cheerleader from my high school answered. And I said, you know, it'd be kind of neat if I could find some of the girls that were on the farm when I was. Are there any black women that grew up on the farm with me? My dad and granddad had a huge tobacco and cotton and dairy farm. And she started laughing. And I said, oh, you don't think that's a good idea? And she said, my assistant is Adeline Reddick. And that's the little girl I played in the woods with growing up.
Look at that.
And so I just dropped everything, didn't even pack a suitcase, went to Bishopville, sat
you
down.
You didn't pack a suitcase?
I couldn't wait to see her. It'd been 50 years.
I'm getting in the car and I'm going now. How long of a drive is Bishopville from Florida?
7.5 hours.
Okay.
Well, that's if the traffic's good.
But that's doable in 1 hour. Yeah.
So
I mean, one day.
So we went and sat down and started talking. And the people around us were going, this needs to be a book. This needs to be a book. And so we started making notes, and the more we talked, the more I realized it really should be a book. And we started outlining it. So I would do one chapter, she would do one chapter. And so it flip-flopped from 1960 to 1969. And we put music in it, Negro spirituals that I heard in the cotton fields. We put...
they're in the book?
And you know the yeah. music from the 60s.
Oh, yeah.
All that's in the book.
Oh, yeah.
And
I'm a product of Woodstock. I was there.
And we put some politics in there. We put how we felt when Martin Luther King got shot and Kennedy got shot. So it's her perspective and my perspective as little girls. We argued a lot growing up. We still argue growing up as grown-ups, but we're at the end of the day, we're still really good friends. I had not seen her in 50 years.
Wow.
So you can imagine what that conversation was like. And
I don't like the way 50 years can go by.
We just picked up where we left off. And
I was over on the beach and some kid's an attorney. Oh, hi, Mr. Palmer. How are you in his 30s? So I remember when you came and read to us in our fourth grade. You can go now. I do not want to see you. Then another kid's over there. He's a waiter now. He said he was a water. What do you call the people that deliver the water in a restaurant? Do you know? No.
Waiter.
No. There's a waiter, and then. But anyway, he said when Gaetano's was in business, he said, yeah, when I was 14, you stuck a $5 bill in my hand, and nobody ever gave me a tip. I'll never forget you, Mr. Paul. And here the guys. you know, 28 years of age or something. It's like, oh, my word. So this had to be said. You have not seen her.
No.
In 50 years. By the way, just so folks know, we're talking about Lee's book, and it's called Colored, Seated in Rear, A in Perspective Rear. Of Two Little Children, Black and White, Growing Up in the 60s. And it's by Nancy Lee McCaskill with contributions by Adeline Reddick. And tell us about that cover photo.
That sign is actually an antique sign that my sister has.
A real sign.
A real
that existed.
Sign.
It looks like it's made out of metal.
It is. And,
wow.
And that term keeps coming up in Adeline's chapters, where it hurt her to see those signs saying colored seated in the rear, or whites only, or you can only drink out of this water fountain, you know, whites here, blacks here. In our drug stores in the county that I grew up in, the whites had to eat outside in the back. They were not allowed to eat at the lunch counter.
Mm-hmm.
And in one chapter, she had a cousin that was half white and half black. And so in the late 60s, she got fed up with having to eat out back. And so she tells Adeline, I'm going to eat at the white counter. I'm not going out there anymore. It's hot today, and I'm eating at the counter. And she said, well, they're going to make you go out back. And she said, well, I'm going to tell them that the white part of me wants to eat at the counter today. And she did, and nobody made her move.
Really? She was ahead of her time.
Well, by then in North Carolina, they were having the riots at the drugstores.
That? The famous one at the drugstore.
Right.
Yeah.
I think it was Raleigh, North Carolina.
I think
Carolina.
They have that as a museum.
Right.
I think you can go by the window and look at it, but I don't know if you can go in. And in case somebody listening doesn't understand, that's when a group of blacks, mostly blacks, there may have been a couple of Jewish kids there, I'm not sure, or white kids, but they went into Woolworths, where blacks were not allowed to sit. Because of the color of their skin, they were not allowed to sit at the counter at Woolworths. And, they came in and they were told to move, and they wouldn't move, and they actually punched them and, you know, slapped them, I think spit on them, and such hatred, and none of the Negro children, the black children, the colored children, none of them raised a hand. Because of the beautiful and wonderful Dr. King. She said, I almost break up crying when I think of him. He was just such a great man. And, he said, hatred cannot conquer hatred. Only love can conquer hatred. And they stuck to it. And thank God that a black African-American. Well, not always, I don't know. But anyway, because we have African-Americans actually that are white now, right? But they had a leader of such noble character as Dr. King, you know?
We talk a lot about him in the book, and at one point I go with Shine, and we called her Shine when I was growing up. Her mother used to sing You Are My Sunshine to her, and I shortened it to Shine. And so at one point, Shine and I go to my maid's house to pay her. She was ill that day, and it was the day that they were having the funeral for Kennedy, I believe. And on her wall, she only had pictures of Martin Luther King and John F. Kennedy. And I asked if that was her father. I didn't know it was Martin Luther King.
Yeah.
And they all laughed, and I said, why don't you have pictures of your family? You know, we've got pictures of our family all over the walls at our house.
Yeah.
And they said, well, we don't have the money for cameras or to buy school pictures. This is all we have.
Mm.
And so, that made a big, big impression on me that they thought so much of our leaders that they were on their walls. And to this day, that, you know, every time I look at pictures of our family on the walls, I think about that, how important that was.
I went home with a girl, her last name was Brown, in the school bus, and went to her house, and I was shocked that the only thing they had for a snack in the afternoon, 3 p.m, were potatoes. And I thought it was pitiful to have a potato, and that's no sweets, none of this stuff. Whereas you look back now and go, well, that's a nice, healthy snack. But but they were poor folks, you know, and they didn't have much. And when you're used to having more, it's kind of a shock. You don't realize, you don't think about that when you're a child.
Mm-hmm.
You just take everything for what it is.
There's a chapter in there where I was real active in 4-H, and there's a chapter in there where one of my projects was a nutrition project. And I had to go to all my neighbors, black and white, and put down what they had for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Really?
And one of the poorest black families on the farm, tenant family, when I asked, her name was, well, I changed her name in the book, but I put Essie. When I asked her what she had every meal, it was, she called them crayfish. And I thought she was talking about crawfish, like, you know, a delicacy from New Orleans. Mm. It was actually grubs out of the ditch.
Yeah.
And I cried and cried and cried. Oh. Every meal, it was worms they were having for meals. And she wanted to fry me some and show me that how good they were. And I was just horrified.
Oh.
And I got in trouble for stealing meat out of our family's freezer and giving to them. I felt so bad for them.
Really? Wow. Yeah, we had a... you know, we're a typical white family in upstate New York. And prejudice was not taught. I didn't know the difference between, just wasn't taught, you know. I didn't know until David Brenner came on The Tonight Show, I didn't know that Jewish people had big noses. So I learned it from a Jew.
You know what I mean? We had a lot of Jewish families in our community, and my best friend was Sally Ginsburg. So our family did not discriminate. I was very proud of my family for what I thought was taking care of the black people. You know, if they needed medicine or something, my family paid for it. If they got drunk on a Saturday night, they bailed them out of jail. But then when I was talking to Adeline, she explained to me, oh, honey, that came out of our pay at the end of the year. And I said, what do you mean? She said, well, we were sharecroppers. Anything your family paid for at the end of the year, it came out of our share.
Mm-hmm.
And if we didn't make, if our families did not make a good crop, we may not have anything for the rest of the year. She said, we were nothing but glorified slaves.
Yeah, really.
And it hurt me.
All right, we're going to take a little break, and then we'll be back. If you're listening in the morning, you can listen to this interview in its entirety. It's called Colored, Seated in Rear, and it's by Nancy Lee McGaskill.
Myself to thee, Lord, I give myself to thee. When I'm happy, when I'm sad, Lord, I give myself to thee. Lord, I give myself to thee. Lord, I give myself to thee. When in good times, when in bad, Lord, I give myself to thee.